Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again to answer your automotive questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls right now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon is a popular guest. I advise you, as your non-attorney advisor, to call early. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. You got a car question? Get it ready. Gordon Fricke is here, and we'll get to your calls after the news. Well, hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the program today to answer your questions about automotive issues is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated. It's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. He is always a popular guest on this program. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question. 1-800-348-2551. Or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, our number, and I'll give you a chance to write it down. Okay, ready? You got your pen? 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here.
Had a nice drive in?
Well, you know, we were just talking about that, and I either picked the worst riding vehicle, or I think the roads are getting very bad.
Oh, again? You mean potholes?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God, awful.
787. I thought I was crashing through a cornfield.
You have to, in between swearing, you have to cut our public works people some slack because they just can't keep up with all that.
Oh, yeah. It's just the fact of the horrendous cold spell we had, the winter weather. It just all piles up, all the snow plowing, all the salt, all the junk.
Last weekend, there was a terrible one. It was like a crater on Washington Ave out by the SUNY offices.
Yeah.
So I hit it coming back from the store. And then the next day, I had something else and I was out there. Forgot about it. Did it again.
Hit it again.
My own fault.
Costly. Could be wearing and breaking things.
Thankfully, my car is in such bad shape, you'll never know the difference.
Just another pothole.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, this one came in via email, and then we'll go right to the phones. This one is from D in Mountainville. Following your advice, I'm changing the synthetic oil in my 2017 Mini Cooper every 3,000 to 5,000 miles, even though the guys at the dealership make it obvious that they think I'm nuts. The setup at the dealership makes it impossible for me to watch them change the oil. Since the new Minis don't have dipsticks, how can I check to see if the oil is clean? My friend with the new Audi was able to find an aftermarket dipstick. Do you know if there are aftermarket dipsticks for Mini Coopers? And that's from D in Mountainville.
Yeah, that's a good question. We have some universal dipsticks for different cars that are calibrated. So there is a dipstick tube in most all vehicles, even though there's not a dipstick in it. In Chrysler, for example, you buy one metered dipstick, and it fits Jeeps, and it fits a whole bunch of different engines, and it's calibrated, so you can take a measurement. And that he's got a very good question. How do you know how horrible the oil looks after, let's say, 5,000 miles, 3,000 miles? In terms of sampling what's in there, you could put a cable type of a device down that dipstick tube, a cable from a hardware store or a dipstick from another vehicle, just to dip into the crankcase
and a look.
Pull some out and put it on I usually put it on a white piece of paper to see how bad it looks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he could buy a dipstick for that vehicle.
Okay.
And it might be a universal one that's calibrated to fit other cars.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the way to go there. I mean, if they all have tubes, is it that costly for the manufacturer to put a dipstick in?
I don't know what the thought is other than to make it more of a secret, and you need to bring it back to the dealer.
That is lame.
They did it with transmissions many years ago, eliminated the dipstick and the tube. So you had to now check the transmission fluid on a lift with the car perfectly level at operating temperature, and you had to remove a special plug that had like a stand tube or has a stand tube in the pan.
Yeah.
It's the same procedure, just way more complicated.
Okay, I mean, I guess if you wanted to go that route, just don't put the tube in and tease the owner of the vehicle.
Yeah, that's right. Now, maybe some don't have tubes, but most that I see have a tube with a cap on it. Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. Mike in Richmond. Mike, you're first.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Gordon. Thanks for taking the call. I always learn something new when I listen to this Vox Pop.
Oh, good.
Thanks for being there today, Gordon.
Great.
I have a question actually about another Mini Cooper question for you. I own two Minis. One is the classic Austin Powers Mini, and the second is a supercharged Mini from 2002, the first generation BMW Minis. Those cars do not see winter. So they're in the garage. They're all covered up and all that stuff. I cringe when I start them up first thing in the spring because I know that the oil has all drained out. Is there anything that I could do to make that first start any easier?
Yeah, sure. When you start them, do they rattle and make noises that bother you?
Well, the BMW Mini starts right up, no problem.
Yeah.
The classic, typically, you know, with the carburetor and the choke, typically doesn't catch on the first try. But once it gets going, other than the black smoke that comes out initially, it seems to be fine.
Yeah. So you could, in effect, prime the lubricating system on those cars prior to starting them if they sit all winter. On your newer one, the BMW derived Mini, you could remove the fuse for the fuel pump, and then you can crank the engine for 30 seconds, a minute. Not all at once. Do it in sessions. Basically, you're going to crank the engine over. It's going to turn the oil pump. Mm-hmm. It's going to lubricate the entire engine for you. And you'll even notice...
Without turning it on.
Yeah. And you'll even notice while you're cranking it, if you crank it long enough, the oil light will go out saying, we're at okay pressure.
Huh.
And you can... The other car's a little more difficult because that is a carbureted Mini Cooper. But if you were to interrupt the fuel supply, either pinch a line from the fuel pump to the carburetor,
I can do that pretty easily.
Although it may, there may be enough gasoline still in the carburetor from last year to get it going. But if you take the coil wire off, you're going to stop the spark, but the engine's going to keep bringing in raw gasoline. So you might inadvertently flood the older car by doing that.
That's a lot of work. Is it worth it?
Okay.
Once he's got the knack of it, it'll be nothing.
Okay. Yeah. And you would recommend something like that?
Well, it's not a bad idea. It gets the engine all up to lubrication. Sure.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Over to David in Catskill. David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Gordon.
Hello.
Hey, so my question is about my muffler. I have a 98 Toyota 4Runner, and the muffler is kind of like falling apart. There was a crack in it, and then I tried to tape it up, and then the whole bottom of the muffler started falling off. So I connected it. I taped it back up with like a steel cable clamp because it was like too cold out to use the muffler goo. And now now there's another hole opening up, and I'm just wondering, like, it's really, really loud. And if I just kind of continue like this and try to fix it myself, is that okay, or is there a reason to get a new muffler?
Well, you're not going to harm the engine, but you'll never keep up with it because it sounds like it's to the point now where the muffler's probably pretty badly deteriorated. So I think it would be time to get a muffler. And on that vintage car, I almost think that's a rear section. I mean, it's going to come muffler and some pipes connected to it. I don't think you got to do all the way to the front, but I think if you keep patching it, it's going to be fruitless. But harm to the engine is not really going to occur. It's just going to be noisy to you. And if you have too many leaks way up front, you don't want those gases getting in the passenger compartment.
Yeah, you get a little woozy.
But the catalytic converter takes care of most of that stuff.
I don't think they are. It's just the smoke seems to just come out of the hole, and when I get it covered up, then it comes out the back.
Yeah, I think maybe you're probably well due for a new exhaust.
Well, now you've seen those late night advertisements, the spray rubber or the rubberized tape. I mean, come on, right?
Right, right.
You can build a whole vehicle with the stuff.
Right, just shake the can up and make whatever you want.
So you don't recommend that?
I don't think so. Not on an exhaust system.
All right, because that's what I would do first. All right, David, thanks a lot for the call. And don't do what I do because my car is in terrible shape. Ken, who's on the road, is next. Ken.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a 2012 Nissan Sentra, and I get this intermittent high-pitched beep when I'm driving along. I'm in sales. I'm on the road all day. It generally happens later on in the day, but I don't know what's causing it, and it's driving me crazy.
So when you say beep, I mean, is it like an audio thing, or is it coming from the engine or under the car?
I think it tends to be louder when I open the window, so it sounds like it's coming from under the hood somewhere.
Hmm.
But it's not like a whistle, but it is high pitched.
And it's continuous when it's happening?
Well, yes, and then it'll stop for a second and then start and go for another maybe second and then stop. Sometimes it'll go for as long as 10 or 12, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
If there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it.
This is what I would try to do. When the car is making that noise, and it sounds like it's while you're traveling, pull over and then speed the engine up with the gas pedal to the RPM where it was making the noise on the highway. See if you can reproduce the sound. And if you can,
and
you've isolated it to the engine and all the stuff that turns with it, rather than the transmission, the drivetrain, the wheels, the axles, the brakes, all that stuff. And that'll help you.
It almost sounds like an alarm type of a beep.
Huh.
You know, like when your door's open or, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't sound like an engine sound. I'm kind of a little bit of a gearhead, not great, but it doesn't sound like the whistle from air blowing by something. It doesn't sound like a belt or anything like that. Yeah. And I've tried to pull over and get out of the car, and it stops.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's why I asked you earlier if it was an audio type thing, because to me, when you said a beep, it doesn't sound like a mechanical problem.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, do you have an alarm on the car? A security system that was added in there later on?
No.
Because, you know, let's say the siren...
Well, I bought it used, so I don't think so.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, if the alarm system was going bananas and the siren was very weak, it may be activating and you don't know it. But that's going to be a tough one because you've got to isolate the sound and be able to reproduce it.
Yikes.
I would try different things.
Exactly.
I would try different things when it occurs.
Okay, we have to take a break here, Ken, but thank you very much for the call. That's an interesting one, and do follow up with us next time if you figure it out. Gordon Fricke is our guest, 800-348-2551, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Hooked Seafood Company and Galleria 7 Market Latham, fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu, raw bar, custom orders, and platters available. HookedSeafoodINC.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993. Offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. From Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, transitional care, rehabilitation therapy, and respite long-term and palliative care for seniors. DaughtersofSarah.org. Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. And from Careers in Transition LLC Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, Careers in Transition LLC.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is the guest. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. This one came in via email from Roger, and the subject heading, Subframe Rust. During the winter, I take my car to an automatic car wash to get the undercarriage washed. Will this help with rust, or am I just kidding myself?
Yeah, good question, because we've said this before in the show. When you request the underbody wash and the light lights up, is it just the light lighting up, or is it really blasting the underside of your car? Because the theory and the concept is great, because today's cars look great on the outside for a long time, but the stuff under the car, the subframes, the axles, the exhaust system, the brake lines, fuel lines, all that stuff corrodes to death.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good idea to do in the winter.
Okay, this one is from Francesca. Subject heading, dashboard lights. I have a 2004 Subaru Legacy. The lights in the dashboard are out. Pretty sure it's not an issue connected to fuses. How much does it typically cost to replace?
Yeah, so she's referring to the illumination behind the gauges, I'm guessing here.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a dial that changes the intensity of those lights on all cars. Some it's a little thumb wheel, some it's a turn knob. What I always do is move that thing from full dim to full high a bunch of times, and you may get those to come back. There could be a little bad spot in that.
Yeah.
In that, it's called a variable resistor. So I would turn them up and down about 40 times and see if that changes.
And if you get any action there and you see a flicker, there's this stuff that I use on electronics that I work on called Deoxit. And you spray that on, and it gets rid of all that corrosion. A lot of old volume knobs and stuff come clean with that stuff.
We've got a similar product for car electronics, and it evaporates almost immediately.
Yep.
It's a super nice cleaner.
Yep. Yeah. This one is from Pam in Hudson. I have a 2007 Subaru Forester with 70,000 miles. The lube place, well, we won't go by any brand name, has twice tried to sell me servicing the front differential. I only let them do oil changes. The service manual only says to inspect the differential, not to specifically replace fluid at set intervals. My question is, how do I know if it needs servicing, and what does servicing entail? And that's from Pam and Hudson.
Yeah, so Subaru has a pretty good program on fluid maintenance.
Okay.
And if you go in the owner's manual, go to the severe end of this scale, the severe duty, and you'll find on Subarus, particularly of her vintage, that they are recommending changing at some point or another all of those fluids.
Okay.
The differential, the transmission, and the rear differential.
All
so
right.
She should not overlook that. It's a good thing to do.
All right, back to the phones, and Renee in New Paltz is next. Renee.
Hi.
Hi.
I recall this, this particular program before, but I have a question that is really troubling.
Okay.
I'm leasing a 2018 Toyota Corolla, and I've only had it for a little over a month. What happens at night is something nobody seems to understand yet. The apparently the headlights are now LEDs with a different projection out onto the road, but what happens at the end of that projection is a shadow that covers 2/3 of my windshield so that I can't really see well beyond the original projection. Do you know anything about this?
Well, today's headlights are much different. If you see cars coming at you now, the headlights have a much whiter, intense light. And you'll also, they act as though they're going up and down, and it's the light self-leveling. So if you have the HID lighting system, it is fantastic to be on the other end of it, you know.
When you're driving, yeah.
Sometimes. But to answer your question about the shadowing, I think what I would do, because it's such a new vehicle, is ask the dealer if you could test drive the same exact car from them at night and see if it's the exact same issue. Or if yours is different than the one you test drove, then you could say to them, I got a problem, I think, and I'd like my lights to be like this other car, providing the car you test drive has the same lighting package that your vehicle has. I would make a comparison at the dealership with another car.
Okay.
Then you'll know.
I was planning to bring it in during the day, actually, for the service department to look at, but perhaps your suggestion would be more worthwhile.
Too bad. Time just changed. Now you got to wait.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, Renee. We appreciate the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551. The number, and Karen in Monterey. Karen, you're on.
Yay. So, hi there. I have a 2004 Toyota Tacoma, four-wheel drive, just a fantastic truck. Everything was replaced with a Toyota Recall, which was the springs and frame, etc. And I'd like to keep the truck. It's got pretty low mileage. And what does it make sense and what entails to have that totally restored? The body's in pretty good shape, but probably some two panels will probably need to be replaced.
You mean in terms of rust?
Yeah.
Is it rusting now?
Not the new parts, but, I mean, the body guy told me that the side panels of the bed probably will have to be replaced.
Yeah. Earlier on in its life, it would have benefited from some rust proofing and some corrosion protection.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that stuff can be applied on older vehicles, and it will still be effective.
Mm-hmm.
So at the very least, it may not be a bad idea to get this vehicle corrosion protected or rust proofed. And
mm-hmm.
the new stuff is much nicer than it was 30 or 40 years ago. It's a lot of it's wax-based or paraffin-based, and some of it is lanolin-based, if you can believe
mm-hmm.
that.
Huh.
Lanolin's like sheep's wool lanolin.
Sure, yeah.
And it doesn't flake off or chip off. It stays gooey and migrates to the rusty areas. I think I would start there and then see after the next few years if that's holding the vehicle together fine. You know, you don't need to replace a bunch of panels.
Yeah, because what I'd like to do is it's a classic at this point because they're not making any more light trucks.
Yeah.
So I'd like to have it totally restored.
Yeah. I mean, other than a full restoration is going to be a touch expensive, you know, body paint and panels. But if you love the truck that much, it might be worth it.
And can you ballpark it and I won't hold it you to it, I promise?
Without seeing a vehicle, I wouldn't have a guess as to how much repair it needs.
Of course.
I would get an estimate at some point and just get somebody's opinion on where to go with it.
Maybe get two estimates. That's always a safe bet.
Yay, Ray. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Karen. We appreciate it. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. And let's go to Bert in Kingston. Bert.
Hi, guys. I have a 2011 Toyota Scion XB. It's got about 115,000 miles on it. My engine light just went on. Check engine, and I brought in Toyota, and they said they replaced actually four ignition coils in it, and it's quite expensive. So I questioned, well, what would cause something like that? And I was told it's gas, that I possibly got bad gas, or to avoid any gas that has a higher ethanol level in it, that could cause it. Does that sound right to you guys, or what do you think?
Well, that usually doesn't go back and damage the ignition coils necessarily. Spark plug life is very long nowadays, and as the spark plug wears, its gap increases and it requires more voltage to fire that spark. So it puts more strain on the ignition coils. So when you see a vehicle with a spark plug change interval of, let's say, just to throw a number out there, 60,000 miles, and the car now has 110 on it.
15,
those coils are really trying their hardest to keep that spark occurring. So spark plug replacement is extremely important. And we change a lot of coils in a lot of cars, and sometimes the manufacturer will update the ignition coil, and it's highly recommended you change them all to get the newest, latest, greatest version in there, which may have been the case with your vehicle, where maybe you only had one actually failing, but they wanted to get the other outdated coils out of there and freshened up. That would be my guess on that one.
I should also look into changing my spark plugs when they're last changed. Now, maybe they're done on the service. I'm not sure, but I don't remember changing the spark plugs, so there must be original spark plugs.
I would look and see when they were due. And if they're even remotely close because of the age of the car, you're only doing it a benefit by changing those spark plugs. Those things do a tremendous amount of work for what relatively little cost they are.
All right, Bert, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I haven't changed a spark plug in probably 20 years. Is it still easy?
What about your snowblower?
Well, my snowblower.
Well, there you go.
I did do that.
I know you did.
But on a car, is it still easy? In the old days, there they were, very easily done.
Yes, that's a good question because some cars are still very easy and straightforward to do. Generally, your four-cylinder engines are pretty easy because there's not a bunch of stuff covering up where the spark plugs are located.
Yeah.
But some V6s, some V8s, you can have a 4 to 6 hour event on some vehicles changing spark plugs.
Boy.
So if you add that amount of time to your labor, and then high-end spark plugs now that last 110,000 miles, you know, they could be $20 a plug. Eesh. You got a V8 engine, you got a big bill.
I'll tell you what.
But it's very, very critical that they get done when they're supposed to.
I suppose so. But even the ones that take a long time, is it something the average layman can try on her own or on his own?
The straightforward ones, the four-cylinder ones, yes, you can still
But not the complicated ones.
No, because you got to take so many things apart to get to them.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's hair-pulling.
Let's go to Marcel in North Adams. Marcel, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Love the show.
Thanks.
I have a 2007 Honda CR-V, 2.4-liter four-cylinder. We've been having a problem with the battery. Just changed it in December. Didn't drive it much until last week. Been in the garage, went to start it. It was dead. So I'm wondering, what could it be? Could it be the alternator?
How long of a period of time occurs between trips, or how often is the vehicle sitting not being driven? Weeks at a time?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So that's the bad thing, because all vehicles have what's called a parasitic draw on the battery. The battery's being used up by the computer modules, the clock, the radio presets, all kinds of stuff is there to, quote, they call it keep alive. You got keep alive memory in all of your modules. And that CR-V doesn't take a very large battery, as you know. It looks like a giant lantern battery.
Huh.
Right.
So on vehicles that are not being driven very often like yours, I would buy a battery tender. It's like a little teeny charger, and it will maintain the proper voltage but not overcharge it. It keeps track of it electronically. Then, and you can buy a kit that allows you to do a quick disconnect, so you don't have to raise the hood and hook a whole bunch of things up. And then the day you go to drive your car, you simply unplug it and go.
And that, oh, okay. Where can I get one of those?
Any auto parts store will sell them, and there is a brand, I think it is called Battery Tender, but there's a lot of different ones out there that maintain your battery's condition.
So it'll trickle charge,
yeah, basically.
But it'll do it Wonderful. In a smart way.
Yeah.
All right, Marcel, thanks for the call. What do you mean you don't have to open the hood to disconnect the thing? Where do you plug it in?
You get a kit with them, and you wire it to the battery terminals, and you run a little connector out somewhere where you can get to it. You could stick it through the grill. Like, yeah. Cars used to have engine heaters sticking out of the grill.
Yeah.
Same type thing. So you just have that kind of like zip tied in a spot where you like it. And then you plug in your tender and unplug it. Very easy.
I would imagine the zip tie is key to that because you don't want the wire floating around the engine as you're
all
driving
over the place.
Around.
Exactly.
All right, let's go quickly over to line one. We're back to line one. Harold in Fort Plain is next. Harold.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I've got a 06 F-150 with a 5.4 V8. I just had a remanufactured engine put in about 25,000 miles ago. And I came up with a miss last night, and I drove it again today, and the miss is solid. It's a solid miss on the engine. I pop the hood, and I hear a ticking from the right side. You think that would be a lifter, possibly valve? I mean, what do you think?
So does it sound like a mechanical tapping that's rhythmic with the speed of the engine?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And that's a,
No. Wrong answer.
Well, as you discovered, that 5.4 Triton engine is not the most robust power plant. They had lots of trouble with those engines.
What's the clicking?
Yes.
Well, they had problems with the variable cam timing. That truck had what were called cam phasers, and it has timing chain and guides and tensioners and three valves per cylinder on some of them, and they were just tremendous amounts of trouble.
Yeah.
I wouldn't panic on the tick at the moment, but what I would do is, are you changing the oil quite regularly in this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's clean and full. I'm sure you've already checked that.
Yes.
Yeah. One thing that these do, but it does not coincide with an engine miss or a skipping or misfire, is they had a lot of exhaust manifold problems, and they would leak out the exhaust manifold gaskets and mimic an engine tick, but it wouldn't be skipping and misfiring. I hope you don't have a valve train issue, but what I would do is get it scanned, see what cylinder it is, and some diagnostics are going to have to be carried out based on what cylinder it is and confirm that the plug and the coil are okay, and then a compression test needs to be done. And you got to go deep if you follow the flow chart. There could be a lot of trouble there, but don't panic yet. But it's got to be.
You have an ominous look on your
face.
Well,
because these engines were just so much trouble.
Yeah.
The dealer used to refer to these things as needing a full dinner, and that means about $2,500 worth of cam phasers and timing chains and plugs and all that stuff.
Well, don't you feel better now, Harold?
Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Actually, I have an ominous look on my face as well. So,
and me too, because, you know, it's break time. So we'll have to take one. Harold, thank you. 800-348-2551. I kid. I love hearing from our underwriters. Let's do that now.
Support comes from Saratoga Chamber Players, presenting a program of Haydn trios with Jill Levy on violin, Judith Serkin cello, and Jeanette Cook on piano. Saturday, March 31st, 3 p.m. at the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls. SaratogaChamberPlayers.org. Colby Attorney's Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. Personal Wine Cellar, Glenville, family-owned business since 2011, providing an array of red and white wines, spirits, and libations. Weekly tastings, not the biggest, just the best. 518-399-9463. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. And from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future, preservenys.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with Gordon Fricke, answering your automotive questions this afternoon. The number is 800-348-2551. This one via email. Gordon from Robert in the town of Wright. I put a reputable synthetic auto oil in my 08 Harley. Since then, I've been bombarded with doomsayers about the ill effects that will occur. What do you think?
Well, that's a good question, because Harleys have a separate transmission from the engine, but a lot of bikes, the transmission is incorporated with the engine, and the clutch is also running in the same oil. So if you didn't use a motorcycle-grade oil, you'd start getting clutch problems, chattering, and it wouldn't destroy it, but it would feel terrible.
Okay.
But as far as his vehicle is concerned, I believe Harley has specs out on what they recommend in their engines, and if you duplicate that with automotive-grade oil of the correct viscosity, you're going to be fine.
Okay.
Because Harley doesn't refine their own oil. They
right.
just require certain specs and additives.
Okay. And this one is from Jonathan in East Chatham. I have a 2015 Ford F-250 that came from the factory with an engine block heater. What does this actually do, and when would it be advantageous to use this device?
Oh, that's interesting. It doesn't say there that it's a diesel engine, though, does it?
Just says Ford F-250.
Yeah. So what that is a little heating element that's installed in the engine block, and it looks just like a little tiny hot water heater. And when you plug it in, it heats that element up, and it warms the coolant, which in turn warms the engine. And if you plug it in for hours and hours and hours, it will circulate through the engine by what's called convection,
mm-hmm.
and you'll have a beautifully warm engine. You'll have instant heat, It's a great thing.
So that's what Batman used when he had to get out of the Batcave very quickly.
Yes, exactly.
All right, this one came in from MJ Downey. Toyota recently doubled the oil change interval on our Prius from 5K to 10K. Should we trust them? Also, we have a 1999 Prism with 244,000 miles.
Phenomenal.
Should we still use synthetic oil?
If that's what they've been doing with that Prism, absolutely. As far as the Prius goes, being a hybrid, the engine's shut off a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So there is the dilemma. What do you do about the oil changes? If the engine's, if you're driving the vehicle in the mode that shuts the engine off a lot, I could see you going much longer on the oil changes. I don't know why Toyota doubled it, but...
You're always conservative about these things.
Yes, I'm usually cutting the manufacturer's recommendations in half on the high ones. When they say do it every 10 or every 12, you should do it every 5 or 6. If they say do it every 5, maybe you can go 3 to 4.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm okay with 5 on cars that are driven on a reasonable, easy commute. But I don't know if I'd double it on that newer Prius. Okay. I'd like to know what their strategy is, why they're saying go so long.
Very interesting. This one is from Jay in Kingston. I have a 2000 VW Passat with 291,000 miles on it. Recently, the airbag warning light has started coming on. Maybe 30% of the trips it lights up. I understand the safety concerns that go along with this, but it has 300,000 miles. Will this affect the state inspection results?
Depends on what state.
Currently, well, New York.
Okay,
Kingston.
Yeah. Currently in New York, we do not fail a car for an airbag light. We just note that it's on.
Yeah. What, do you have a little book?
Well, the inspections are electronic.
Yeah.
So you check off, you go through a checklist. So it asks you, did the airbag light illuminate when the key was on? Yes. Did it go out when the engine was running? In this car's case, you might say, no, it did not go out, meaning it self-checked and found a problem.
Well, what kind of a big brother state asks for the information if it's not required to pass an inspection? Is the state in bed with the insurance companies?
Well, I don't know, but let's take it a step further very quickly. Let's say the airbag light's been on for 3 months.
Yeah.
Car gets in a crash.
Yeah.
Owner says the airbag light has been out the whole time.
Right.
It's time to seek legal action.
Right.
Go back to the record and say, well, it says here your airbag light has been on for the last 2 years.
So Gordon Fricke on the stand.
However, you can go into those airbag control modules and they have a black box in them.
Yeah.
And you can find out how long that airbag light has been on without looking up any state inspection records. So I don't know what they're doing. Are they
very
gathering data?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I suspect they are. Yeah. You're in on it with them. I know it. John in Albany. John.
Yes, hello. A few years ago, I was driving a former employer's car. It was a 2010 Transit. I got a ticket from a state trooper that told me I had one blue headlight and one white headlight, and I had inadequate lighting. Was it the blue headlight or the white headlight that was inadequate?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, that's great.
But, you know, there was at one time, and I know you can still buy them, but you could buy these blue-tinted headlight bulbs, and I think they were trying to mimic maybe the early xenon or HID lights.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if those blue lights were any better or brighter, but a lot of people used them for a while. And if you bought a set of blue lights and one burned out and you couldn't get another one, you put a standard light in it, and you could see these cars coming at you with two different shades of light.
Right.
That vehicle did not come with a blue light from the factory, I doubt.
Okay.
So I think the blue was the one that the officer did not care for.
You could probably fight that in court, yeah?
That's a strange one, though. I mean,
we have legal questions here.
Yeah, really.
Hey, John, thanks a lot for the call. That's an interesting one. Patrick and Troy. Patrick, you're on.
I am. Hi, gentlemen. A couple of quick things, if you don't mind.
Sure.
On that Mini, the carbureted Mini, I suspect that he could get by with just not using the choke. When he cranks it up in the springtime, just leave the choke in until it's established some oil pressure. And after several seconds, as you suggested, of cranking, then pull the choke out. It should fire right up and have oil pressure.
That's a very, very good suggestion, because I wasn't, depending how old that car is, it may or may not have an automatic choke, but you're right.
I suspect it's got a hand choke.
Yeah, if it's a manual choke, that'll give you a bunch of cranking before the engine fires. Yes.
Sure.
Automatic choke. Don't step on the gas pedal.
A manual choke.
Yeah. Pull. You know.
That is cool.
Like a lawn tractor,
yeah,
right?
I like
yeah.
It. All right. You had another one, Patrick.
Well, I just wonder, as long as I've got you on the line, what do you think of specialization? I operate a small repair shop myself, and you know, I realized years ago I can't keep up with different years, makes, models. What do you make of somebody who brings a kind of a high-end car to a generic repair shop? I mean, I realize you've got some real serious experience with the German cars in particular, but you must see them come to you, and they say they just came from, you know, XYZ, they fix all, and it just makes things worse.
Yeah.
Just wondered your thoughts.
That's a great question.
Yeah, it is, because we work on everything. We're in a small town, so, yeah, we see a lot of European cars and other foreign cars, but we service everything.
You do?
Oh, yeah, Chevrolet, Silverado, pickups, Ford, everything.
What's the most exotic car that you've had to service at Barber and Fricke?
We've had a Rolls Royce in the past. We've had Jags, various Porsches.
That's what I do, Jaguars and Land Rovers.
Oh, I love the XJS with the 12-cylinder engine. Oh, got to get me one of those.
But to answer,
I got a lot of those customers.
Oh yeah, man.
But to answer your question, there are times where the stuff is so high tech and so specialized, and we don't have the equipment or the ability to scan or diagnose it, that you have to refer it elsewhere. And most of the times it's got to go to the dealer, because who else can keep up with the technology?
Well, you know, it sounds like you guys ought to commiserate over a beer here. Patrick, thank you for the call. We're going to go over to Carrie in Frankfurt. Carrie.
Good afternoon. Thank you, gentlemen.
Sure.
I've got a 2007 Dodge Ram 1500. Just two nights ago, I lost my four-wheel drive. So I'm sitting in the truck right now, and I'm halfway up my driveway. It's got 206,000 miles on it. And I'm wondering, how much money should I put into a repair before I'm throwing good money after bad?
206,000 miles. It's an 07 Ram 1500.
So does that have a lever on the floor to shift in and out of four-wheel drive?
No, it's a knob on the dashboard.
It is. Okay. So...
And it was making a lot of grinding noises and stuff, and then it finally just gave up the ghost.
Yeah. There's an actuator that engages and disengages your front end, you know, your front drive portion. It's very possible that the actuator is just bad, having trouble or getting tired, and you may not need any major repairs. It may not be a transfer case problem or anything crazy. So I would get that checked out, because the Dodge trucks prior to yours had a vacuum system where you'd throw the lever on the floor, and that would engage the transfer case. But vacuum was there to engage the front differential, and they always had vacuum leaks or problems, and then you wouldn't have any four-wheel drive, and it was a very easy fix. So don't give up on it. It could be fairly straightforward.
All right, Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. And now it's time for Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Emily.
Hi. We have a 2010 Scion XD with almost 100,000 miles on it. We've been having this weird problem with a check engine light that won't go away. It says a small evap leak. We've had it smoke tested and came up with nothing. We've done several things to try to resolve this. And I thought I heard Gordon say on a previous program to someone with a Scion with a similar problem to try Cataclean, and that maybe there was a sensor in there. So I told my partner, who's the actual mechanic, to try that, and we don't have the upshot yet because he's still running through the system. But we have looked so hard and turned off this light so many times to have it come back on. I just wondered if Gordon had anything else.
Okay.
Oh, and I also wondered if a exhaust leak could do it, because today I said that thing sounds a little noisy, but then I thought the smoke test should have showed an exhaust leak, and we've changed the gas cap. So what should we try next to find out why our Scion XD won't stop telling us it has a tiny evap leak?
Yeah. So the tiny evap leak is probably the most evasive sometimes to fix. It pulls more hair out and makes more frustrated car owners and mechanics than any code there is.
You're right about that.
The Cataclean is not going to help that at all. That's there for the catalytic converter, the oxygen sensors, that kind of stuff. So that won't help your evap code, but it's good for the rest of the system. So you're not wasting your money there.
Okay.
The smoke test is there to try to find tiny leaks in the tank venting system for anywhere from the gas cap to the engine. And that's not always 1,000% conclusive. We see a lot of corrosion on the seal between the gas cap and the filler neck. And it doesn't take much. And we constantly take a scotch pad and clean that gas door or the gas neck seal where the gas cap screws down. And it
so you clean that with, what did you say, a scotch
pad? Like a scotch pad, you know, a scouring pad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I...
And you clean right inside the filler neck.
Right where the gas cap gasket meets the filler neck. That's a very critical point.
Okay.
And then I will take some synthetic grease and coat the seal of the gas cap with it. And it sounds
seal
like you've already, you've probably already replaced the gas cap.
Yeah, we did. And then one mechanic said he didn't, you know, it's an older car. I'm not the mechanic, but I think they said they didn't like that one. Try the old one again. We went back and forth a couple of times.
Huh. Yeah. It is, a lot of car manufacturers recommend using an original equipment cap so you know it's correct for the vehicle.
Yeah.
So that I would check. And other than that, I can't advise you to do anything other than, you know, you can check every joint, every connection, every hose from the gas cap to the engine. But that's very time consuming and you need a lift.
Well, if you have a mechanic in the family, you're going to save hundreds of dollars right there.
Well, no, we do, but we don't have a lift or even a garage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you need
so,
to.
Like, he does what he can, but then we have a couple of mechanics we work with. And, Gordon, I was trying to write. So you said the gas cap gasket meets the filler neck. That's where you clean with a scotch pad.
Right.
And then you coat the seal of the gas cap with
just put a little synthetic grease around that gas cap seal so it's perfectly sealed when it screws down on the filler neck.
And then that's what Michael, that's my partner, has been saying. You'd have to check every joint between here and there. And that would take forever, but we keep trying and we keep not solving it.
Well, maybe this will do it. Maybe it's just that.
It is. This has solved lots of cars, but if that seal is absolutely perfect before you do this, it may not help it, but it's so quick and easy. Anybody
worth
can do
shot.
It. Why not?
All right, Emily, thanks so much. We'll move it along here and let's go over to Tom in Ashley Falls. Tom.
All right. I've got a battery draining issue. After I shut off the motor, I've got a little whining going on under the hood. And so I isolated what it is that's running, and it's the EFI circuit. So I just pulled the fuse when I stop. You know, it'll last for an hour or so. But when I'm going to stop for a couple of hours, I have to pull the fuse, rest it. You know, I want to know what's the way to find out what I need to do to that EFI system. It's a 2006 Toyota Sienna.
So when you pull a fuse that's labeled EFI, it stops? Is that what you're saying?
It does.
Okay.
What's EFI?
Yes.
Electronic fuel injection.
Okay.
But that how many amp is that fuse?
I think it's a 10. It's a yellow.
Okay.
So, but I think it is a 10.
Yeah. If your fuel pump is what keeps running, you will hear noises because there's pressurized fuel coming forward from the tank, running through the system, and going back to the gas tank in some cases.
Yeah.
And that fuel pump will kill the battery pretty fast. Your car, I believe that has what's called a fuel pump relay. If you search out that fuel pump relay, and instead of taking out the EFI fuse, pull the relay, and the sound stops. You could have a stuck relay.
Oh,
could
be
that
easy fix.
Could be that easy.
All right.
Would try that.
Tom, thanks a lot. Let's quickly go over to Kayvon in Hudson. You're on.
Hey, thank you guys for taking my call. I got a two-part question.
Okay.
I have a 2014 Cadillac CTS Coupe with 29,000 miles.
Okay.
And I put it in the garage since the winter start. And I go to start it up the other day, and it just, the battery is like weak.
Okay.
I have a trickle charge that I put on my motorcycle battery. But I take the battery out of the motorcycle. I'm wondering if I don't want to take the battery out of the car to put the trickle charge on it.
Right,
I'm
yes.
wondering if I could put the trickle charge and the battery while it's in the car.
Okay,
yes.
And we only have about 30 seconds here, so
yes.
go ahead.
Yes, you can put that trickle charger on your car with everything installed, and it may take a long time to bring it back up to 100% charge because it's a big battery. versus the smaller battery that your motorcycle is using. But unless the car has a big current draw, that trickle charger will eventually bring you back up to a full charge. So the answer is yes.
Okay.
So I don't have to take it out. I don't have to take it out the car.
No, you can leave it in.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Hey, Kayvon, thanks a lot. That's where we will have to leave it. To Gordon Fricke, well done, sir.
Yeah, that was nice. We had a lot of good calls.
Now, when you head back, I want you to avoid the potholes.
Wow, where am I going to go?
Well, not around here. Good luck. Put it in hovercraft mode.
There you go.
Out of town. Hey, thanks a lot for being here. Support comes from Grapes and Grains, Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. Grapesandgrainswine.com. Mother Earth Storehouse, serving the Hudson Valley, offering organic and natural items and a selection of bulk items, including pasta, dried fruits, trail mix, coffee, tea, and spices. MotherEarthStorehouse.com. And Dola Pizzeria Napolitana, traditional Neapolitan-style pizza in a 900-degree wood-fired oven. Downtown Great Barrington, open 6 days and seven nights. DolaPizza.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for the great calls and all the great emails. Zach Malloy is our engineer, and our phones today answered by Deb Malik. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we'll enjoy some Irish fare from O'Slattery's Irish Restaurant and Pub in preparation for St. Patrick's Day. So that's exciting. Stand by now for news.